as teachers, we can often see students as just what they produce in our classrooms, the assignments that they do, the grades, their behavior. But SEL invites us to see them as a whole person.
You cannot teach someone how to read, write, do math if they cannot regulate their emotions.
For a long time in education, it's been just show up, deliver, and then you're done. That's not what it is at all. It's about building relationships with kids and making them recognize the potential that they have to do all the good things.
How can I empower my students to become leaders of their own learning?
What is SEL and why is it important? I'm Emily Brookhart, and this is The Power of SEL, where we'll be exploring well-being and academic achievement through social and emotional learning, brought to you by Education First in partnership with Novo Foundation. As a senior consultant at Education First, I work with our team of 80 consultants and advisors to inspire and support educators and to help elevate excellence and equity in classrooms all across the United States. And for the last 13 years, this partnership between Education First and Novo Foundation has helped build momentum for high-quality social and emotional learning practices, or SEL for short, through education, technical assistance, and networks. And we've had the incredible opportunity to award grants totaling $15.8 million, with those funds given directly to over 500 educators and more than 270 school districts across the country. The purpose of this podcast is to celebrate the stories of educators and their students who have benefited from these SEL funds and programs over the years. And by hearing their stories, help us all understand why SEL is so important. Now, this podcast isn't just for teachers and school administrators. We believe it's also important for parents, community leaders, and policymakers all across the United States to hear these real classroom experiences directly from the voices of our incredible teachers, administrators, program directors, and funders. In this episode, we'll lay the foundations of what SEL is and why it's important. In the next episode, you'll hear stories of how SEL happens in classrooms and how districts have successfully implemented SEL across their schools. So what does social and emotional learning actually mean? Let's hear directly from a few educators and other experts. Some of them you'll get to know better later in this episode, and some of them you'll hear in future episodes of this podcast.
I think I would define it as a way that we have to learn about ourselves, how we cope with ourselves and our own emotions, and how we feel about things in order to productively interact and react with others in conversation and collaboration.
Social emotional learning to me is finding ways to make sure that everyone is feeling safe, that we're being kind, that we're being intentional, and we're being joyful in the way that we interact with each other.
To have someone show and demonstrate care for them by asking how they're doing, by asking about their futures, by including their interests and hobbies into the curricula, including who they are into the curricula.
A child's sense of belonging, a child's understanding of knowing who and whose they are, this idea of collective responsibility and self-efficacy.
SEL for me is a way of life. It's a way of interacting with the world, with others, a way of being. It's important to feel safe in our relationships, in our families, in our neighborhoods, classrooms, schools, and communities. And SEL provides an avenue to build awareness of ourselves, others, and interactions with one another so we can feel safe in words and actions, in living day-to-day, walking down the street, speaking to our teachers, talking to our classmates. So it's a way to build skills, competencies, and awareness around that.
Social emotional learning helps the students to recognize what they're going through, what emotions, and how to process their emotions. And most importantly, it helps the students to work together.
How to innovate and problem solve in a collective way, how to disagree respectfully, how to be a citizen in a diverse world, and to be both individually successful in school and in life, and collectively as a part of a larger community.
If we don't have good social emotional learning, then we can't focus on anything else. So we're not able to be productive members of society because we're just trying to make it through the day, just surviving and living rather than thriving.
One of the organizations that has worked hard to bring SEL to the forefront is the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning, commonly known as CASEL. Dr. Blidine Barthelis has been at CASEL for 5 years and currently serves as the Senior Director of Practice.
Our vision really is to create an opportunity where all students, pre-K through 12, have access to social and emotional development alongside the academic development that takes place. We see it as an integral part of education, and we see it as something that every student needs in order to thrive and succeed, not only in their pre-K through 12 life, but in their life beyond that time as well. I started my education as a school counselor. I did that for about 8 years before transitioning to a central office position in DC Public Schools. Was there for about 6 years. And when I was leaving, I was the director of school climate and social emotional learning. So I got to see pretty clearly the importance of not just SEL for students, but SEL for the district as a whole, SEL for adults, and the needs that adults have to be able to show up in a way that creates the types of learning environments that we know that students need to thrive. We want to make sure that every single school creates the opportunity for every student to thrive.
CASEL's website, casel.org, is the first place many educators go to learn more about system-wide SEL and the best ways they can apply it in their schools. So, how does CASEL define SEL?
Social-emotional learning really is the way in which we develop the knowledge, the skills, the attitudes, the ways of being that really support our growth and development overall. It's a relational process that takes place between adults and students. It's an individual process, but also a relational process that allows for co-development of environments with young people and students that really speak to the needs that young people have. We want people to understand that it's not just an acquisition of skills. It's not just we put a lesson in front of a student and then you've done SEL. It is the acquisition, but also the application and the practice of perseverance, of conflict resolution, of empathy. So we're not only teaching skills, but we're also creating environments where we can practice it and see it modeled by adults. The other piece is that we're recognizing that this is not just a student-to-adult situation, but this is a full community of learning. So we're looking at caregivers and families and district office leaders. We're looking at communities that know our students better and how we collaborate across the board to really create learning environments that support students overall. When we're talking about social-emotional learning, we're talking about taking those processes and laying them on top of everything that happens academically so that students can learn how to problem solve with one another as they're going through a math class, so that they can look at a social studies lesson and identify within that lesson the ways in which human beings behaved that could have led to a different outcome. If students leave our educational system and they know the math and they know the language arts, is that sufficient for them to be the types of individuals that would contribute to our society, that could support our overall well-being, that could engage civically? And what we were finding that there are specific skills that young people need to have. In the past, we would just call it emotional intelligence, but there wasn't really language as it relates to what was happening in the classroom.
Some students are lucky enough to have opportunities to develop their social and emotional skills with the help of certified clinical mental health counselors outside of school. Sissy Goff and David Thomas are certified child development specialists and are the co-executive directors of Daystar Counseling in Nashville, Tennessee. Besides counseling kids and parents, they both have written multiple parenting books, have their own weekly podcast, and travel the country every month speaking at events to educators and parents. We were able to sit down with both of them to find out what social and emotional challenges they see kids facing these days and the impact that educators equipped with SEL tools have on our students.
For all the concerns that exist, and there certainly are many overall, I'm really excited that we're thinking about those two threads of our kids' development more and more in the academic space. And how could we take advantage of helping them not just develop cognitively, but emotionally and socially as well, and defining what those emotional milestones and social milestones are that we want to see kids moving toward all throughout development. And then more importantly, thinking about what are the nuts and bolts of each of those, and how do we help kids develop these really important emotional muscles of things like empathy, of things like resourcefulness, and the social muscles of reciprocity. How do I do the back and forth of relationship, which is simply harder for a lot of kids? And so I would say, in more than any other time in the history of Sissy and I doing this work, we are seeing it be a priority with parents and educators more than ever, which is encouraging and exciting, and I would argue needed.
Sissy and David, like other counselors all over the U.S., recognize the challenges teachers face on a daily basis in not just being prepared in their lesson plans, but also being prepared for the social and emotional stresses many kids bring into their classrooms.
Undoubtedly, what I'm seeing the most right now is anxiety, and that anxiety is spilling over into school. It's impacting their grades. It's impacting their relationships, which then impacts their grades as well, because that's what they're thinking about so much. I'm seeing more perfectionism than I've ever seen among girls. I think school has become more of a stressor in the lives of kids than I have seen in 30 years of counseling. The social piece of it, the emotional piece of it, being able to regulate their own anxiety that's happening during the school day, all of that is making school more stressful than it's ever been. And with kids, we are now looking at 1 in 4 children are dealing with anxiety, 1 in 3 adolescents, and girls are twice as likely as boys to deal with it. And so thinking about classrooms, the amount of kids that are sitting in that room struggling is really significantly prevalent.
Underlying these different pressures students face on a daily basis are the systemic injustices and inequities too common in our Black, Brown, and Indigenous communities here in the United States. SEL can be helpful, but only if there is concerted attention to equity as well. Miles Williams is the elementary school principal of Bricolage Academy in New Orleans and has seen so many benefits from the SEL practices he and his teachers learned to use.
How do you create a place where people can learn? You create a place that's safe, that's equitable, and that's joyful. There's so many components to that. SEL is such an important part of that. My background before going to education was social work. I got my master's in social work at University of Chicago, and it's been such a valuable experience for me to be able to just ground education in mental health and awareness. The way that equity and inclusion in particular in SEL intersect in our school is around discipline practices. When we're talking about how, for example, disproportionately Black boys are disciplined more than any other demographic. And when we're talking about like how to be restorative and how to help kids learn a lesson rather than like teaching them a lesson by being punitive, it's so important that one, as adults, that we're very mindful from an SEL standpoint, but also we're teaching these kids the skills, because more often than not, behavior is learned. Because it's learned, it means it can be unlearned. And SEL is providing kids the skills to be able to deal with conflict, deal with tough emotions, self-regulate, figure out how they want to navigate things.
The Brookings Institution reports, quote, "Data demonstrate how Black boys are disproportionately suspended from school, less likely to be in classrooms where teachers set high expectations, more likely to be involved with the criminal justice system for normal, age-appropriate behavior than their white peers, and less likely to be enrolled in gifted and talented programs than their white peers." And their article titled "Defining a Culture of Care for Black Boys" by Camille Bousette goes on to say that, quote, "Because of endemic anti-Black male racism, Black boys are among the most marginalized groups of children in the U.S. Girls of color also experience many challenges as a result of historical racial marginalization that happens in and outside of the education system. Through the SEL work we've done at Education First, we've had the opportunity to explore the experiences of Black girls through the work of Dr. Monique W. Morris. Dr. Morris is the author of several books related to this topic, which we have linked under the description of this episode on thepowerofsel.org. She addresses the harmful policies, conditions, and assumptions that disproportionately criminalize Black girls' behavior and move them towards, quote, school to confinement pathways. For Dr. Morris, disrupting this punitive pipeline and push out happens when educators develop meaningful relationships with their students that are culturally understanding and value and celebrate Black girls' development and contributions to the larger community. SEL and cultural understanding or cultural competency go hand in hand.
When we're talking about across cultural differences, we might have very different responses to how things need to be resolved. I think an example, especially for some of our low income families, especially in some of our Black families, when someone hits you, you hit them back straight up. That's what we're told to do. And that's what parents often tell their students to do. And so if you come to school and someone hits you and you hit them back, and then you're being punished for what your parents taught you to do. That's a really confusing thing for a kid. If a majority of your day, majority of your life, if that's what you're told to do is defend yourself and support yourself. But then when you're at school, you're getting penalized for that. That's a very hard thing to learn. At our school in particular, we're big on trying to make it as simple as possible. Like if you're not being safe, that's not okay. We need to talk through that, right? If someone hits you or if you hit somebody unsolicited, that's not okay. That's a non-negotiable. That's off the table for us. Bottom line, we don't hurt people. And also, I'm not going to expect you to get punched in the face and then just go run and come tell a teacher. Like, I want you to protect yourself. You did not feel safe. You deserve to protect yourself. And how could we have avoided it on the front end? What could have happened so we've been preventative and proactive? Because something led up to you getting punched in the face. Maybe you said something to that person you shouldn't have said. And maybe sometimes someone just came out, had a bad day, hit you in the face. Ultimately, being able to reflect on what happened, who was impacted? What do we need to do to be able to move forward from this situation and how we prevent it from happening again? A lot of those things require SEL skills. And really what I'm explaining is a kind of restorative process, but that's the way that we think about behavior. And that's the way we think about SEL in a way that regardless of where you're from, regardless of any exceptionality you may have, regardless of what identities you may hold, what your cultural background might be, how do we make sure that every single person in our building is safe? Every single person understands what it means to be kind. What does it look like to be intentional? And then also, how do we have fun in that process and do that together? And it's not fun when people are hurting one another. It's not fun when we're being mean and we're saying unkind words. Like trying to make it as simple and clear so that folks can understand what their limitations are and then correct it when we see it.
Miles is talking about something very real, that SEL should be something practiced with an understanding of your own students' and community's context. Without making sure that you are responsive to your own community's needs, there is a lot of room for inequity. There are also many cognitive developmental issues at play, even for neurotypical students.
When we even think about the way we structure classrooms and the fact that students are required to do a lot of sitting still and maintaining focus throughout a 7-hour academic day, and sitting still and maintaining focus don't tend to be strong spots for a lot of boys. And so it is a challenge just to bring the focus that's needed to the learning environment to really absorb the content. And is, you know, statistically where we know a lot more boys struggle with ADHD. And so that to an even greater degree being a struggle with focus and activity in a classroom. But I would also say, you know, as we look at learning hurdles in the academic setting, a higher percentage of boys are struggling in that space. And I start to see it really affect boys' sense of identity, where rather than just thinking school's harder for me, but I'm great at this, they start to really build an identity around feeling like I'm not smart, I'm not competent. And so I love coming together with parents and educators to think about how we can absolutely help boys feel competent and confident in the classroom and outside.
In addition to addressing inequities involving race and neurodiversity, SEL has had a huge impact in helping create safe and inclusive learning environments for LGBTQIA+ students and educators.
My name is Danielle Dupuis. My pronouns are she, her, hers. And I am the LGBTQIA+ initiative specialist. This is a relatively new role and position in our system. I've been at this job for a little over a year. And prior to that, I was a library media specialist and video production teacher at a high school. And prior to that, I worked as a media specialist in an elementary school in our district. And prior to that, I was a public librarian. So I have a collective experience of over a couple of decades in libraries and public schools. It doesn't matter who you are, where you come from. I think that most of us have had an experience where in one way, shape, or form, there's been a feeling of being othered or being marginalized. I don't want to get into the comparison of who has things harder, but I think that there are definite factors that impact our ability to be able to show up in certain spaces, that impact how we show up in certain spaces, and impact how we feel in certain spaces. And so being able to be very clear in our representation in our classrooms, we have a very diverse district. To me, it is important that we recognize that. I've heard educators say, it doesn't matter to me who you are or what you look like, I'm going to treat everybody the same. And I know that that comes from a place of they think that it's being kind and caring, but it's really not, because you just dismissed all of the things that make each of us unique. And so how can we highlight that uniqueness and celebrate it and welcome it into each of our rooms?
From New Orleans to Baltimore to the Bronx, there are many similarities in the needs of students and educators across our country. But there are also many unique needs that each district faces. And SEL is equipping teachers like Alhassan Suso to find innovative ways to meet those needs.
My name is Alhassan Suso. I am a high school U.S. history, government, and economics teacher at the International Community High School in the South Bronx. I am also the SEL coordinator at my school. I also happen to be the 2019 New York State Teacher of the Year and the 2020 NEA National Teacher of the Year. While my job as an educator is to help them develop academic skills, first and foremost, these are people. And I focus more on the individual rather than the curriculum, because I'm a big believer that as their personal lives develop, the academics will follow. While I was jumping up and down about the importance of the French Revolution, the child in front of me did not have breakfast. While I was so excited about the three estates, the kid in the back slept at a homeless shelter. Did I know all of that? No, because all I was focused on was the importance of my curriculum. So all those wonderful PowerPoints were all about me. You know, because I was so excited about what I needed to teach them, I never took the time to learn their stories. And that's when I paused and then shifted my approach. I believe sincerely that SEL is the most effective tool to promote equity. And the reason I say that is, when you think about SEL practices, it's about self-awareness, right? Self-management. When you are aware of, when you have self-awareness, then by default, very likely you will also be aware of other people, right? When you become socially aware, then you have a better understanding of the social structures that create the inequalities of our society. As an educator, the question for me is, how can I empower my students to become leaders of their own learning? The best way to do that is to help them to become self-aware, to help them to be able to self-manage. Instead of now me managing their learning, they are able to manage their own outcomes. And as a result of doing that, what that ultimately leads to is this. I can have a differentiated classroom without me being the driver of that, because my students now have the tools, they have the skills. More importantly, they have the language, because many times students, they know these feelings, but they don't have no means of expressing them.
Let's move now from the East Coast in New York to the middle of the Pacific Ocean in Hawaii.
My name is Ivy Cruz. I was born in the Philippines, raised in Southern California, really close to the border, and currently live in Honolulu, Hawaii. I've lived here for over 17 years, and I've been an educator for over 20 years in different capacities as a counselor, advisor, teacher. I currently teach at the University of Hawaii at Manoa in the College of Education. I also work on a grant with the University of Hawaii Hilo, developing a peer mentor program and the wellness component of that, and work on a project also related to community schools. I think I came across SEL through recognizing Later, I had the term of intergenerational trauma, but growing up, I didn't know that term, right? My dad's side grew up in poverty and my grandmother raised 7 children as a single mother. Some of the challenges that comes along with growing up in these circumstances were passed down onto me. And so I developed an awareness around wanting to not pass down those kind of issues and developing awareness of some of my own things that shaped me and then in turn healing. And so I think now in the classrooms, students have an awareness around that too, looking at the whole person. And so looking at the 5 CASEL SEL skills is self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, decision-making. And so I see how students are kind of pausing and thinking about how they can do things differently.
Ivy is referring to the SEL framework that the Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning calls the CASEL Wheel, which is found on their website and which we'll include a link for in this episode's notes. CASEL's Senior Director of Practices, Dr. Bladine Barthelis, is going to explain all 5 core competencies and 4 settings for us in detail. So if you haven't already, now is the time to grab your notebook and pen to take notes.
There's 5 SEL core competencies. So it's self-awareness, which is how well we know ourselves, how well we know our skills, our abilities, the areas in which we don't shine as well, our challenges, our triggers, what sets us off, what causes us or allows us to feel safe. It is the ways in which we interact with other people. It's the constant information that we get from the world around us about who we are, and it's how we interpret the information that we get from the world around us about who we are as well. So it's our understanding of self. Then there's self-management. I like to say that it's what you do with that information regarding self-awareness. It's how you engage with other people. It's how you manage the triggers. It's how you decide that it's time to resist. And how do you decide that it's time to persist? And how do you make that decision for yourself? Self-management is self-management, not other people managing me, which is what we try to do in schools all the time, is manage other people. So the self-management is also empowering, but this is also where agency sits. It's where we have power in our actions, in our voice, and we can choose to use and leverage our voice and actions to shift the direction of where we're headed and to shift in a way that connects to who we are as individuals.
So the first 2 competencies are self-awareness and self-management. Those are intrapersonal, or within each individual. Let's hear now about the interpersonal, or the competencies focused on relationships.
So the social awareness is how aware we are regarding what's happening outside of us, the context that we're in, the society that we sit in, the rules of engagement that we've been taught, and the ways in which we choose to lean into those so that we can continue to progress through society in a way that's meaningful to us. It's the way in which we are able to read social cues and context, all of those different pieces that are critically important to how we engage at work, how we engage in classrooms, how we engage with one another. It's also our understanding of how society views others as well, other populations, other groups, other countries, and the ways in which we interpret that. The relationship skill piece is the ways in which we create and maintain relationships. So it's not just actually creating a relationship, but can you keep relationships? How do you engage and interact with people? Can you show empathy for others? Can you take a step back? Can you hold space with another person without judgment? Like, how do you do that? That is the relationship skills. So when you think about social awareness, relationship skills, those are the interpersonal, the ways in which that we are able to successfully engage and interact with other people who are oftentimes very different than ourselves.
Social awareness and relationship skills are the interpersonal competencies. Now, let's hear about the last competency in the CASEL wheel.
The responsible decision making is how do we use all of the information that we've gotten from the intrapersonal, the interpersonal, to make the types of decisions that support ourselves personally, support our communities, and support our society. How do we continue to make decisions? When I get information about how I showed up in that meeting and how someone felt that it was rude and disrespectful. What decision do I make about how I show up next time? When I get information about how my interaction supported someone and helped them to feel like they belonged in our community, what decisions do I make to continue those types of behaviors? So it's what you do with the information that you're getting in all of the other competencies, but it's also a standalone where you're recognizing that I have responsible decisions to make throughout my life and in any interaction that I have, period.
So the five competencies are self-awareness, self-management, social awareness, relationship skills, and responsible decision-making, which make up the center of the castle wheel. But students can't achieve these competencies by themselves, and nor should they have to. The castle wheel includes outer rings that show the four key settings that students need to develop and practice their social and emotional skills.
The rings speak to where this actually happens. So it happens in the classrooms through our instruction, through our climate, the kind of environments, the supportive environments we create for young people. It happens in our schools through our policies that we create, our practices, the culture that we create. If you say you love your children and the only thing that you ever have when they mess up is automatic office referral and then exclusion, then your policies don't align with your stated values. So you want to think about how is it happening in schools. Then we talk about families and caregivers. This is where we learn to have authentic partnerships with families and caregivers. And we recognize that they are the first educators of their young people and that we have the opportunity to partner with them in the education of young people overall. And then the last piece really is the communities. Communities are where we can create aligned opportunities. It's kind of that ecosystem of learning that Karen Pittman talks about all the time, where learning happens not just in the classroom, but it happens in the YMCA, the Boys and Girls Club, the church that they attend, and really pulling those community organizations in because they know our young people in a way that we don't typically know them, but creating those opportunities for us to learn together. So that's kind of SEL in a nutshell or in a wheel.
The data clearly shows students who have these social and emotional skills to cope with challenges at school have a much better chance of academic success.
I read a study years ago that talked about identifying kids who scored high in SEL skills actually missed fewer days of school. They were healthier, which was not surprising when you think about everything we currently know about the mind-body connection and that, you know, if I am attending to my mental health, there's a greater likelihood my physical health is going to benefit from that reality as well. So it was not at all surprising to find that those kids were less sick. And all the other ways, you know, we certainly have a lot of data around how it benefits kids in terms of greater academic achievement, but also research tells us they get in fewer fights. They have better conflict resolution skills, like all the different parts of their day, whether it's I'm frustrated because someone's taking too long to make a decision in the lunch line and I kind of want to shove them out of the way. I've now got better skills on board so that I know what to do with that frustration throughout the day. So all the different moments, I think it can come into play.
Alhassan Suso has also witnessed his students improve their attendance and participation, as well as having more students graduate and go on to college thanks to the SEL program that he established at his school. You'll hear more about the details of his program in the next episode.
We all spend time where we see value. If these kids happen to see value in this, I'm sure they would show up. The first year, 29 kids enroll and 100% of them graduated and 100% went on to college. And then 5 years into the program, 70% of our graduating seniors would come to school an hour early. This year, it's actually 85% of our students. Right now, I have to go downstairs in the auditorium to actually do the program because we are not fitting in my classroom anymore, despite having a huge classroom that used to be able to fit 60 kids. But now we are much bigger than that. Within 5 years, our graduation rate went from 31% to 84.9%. And if you look at that statistically, yes, while that is impressive, in 2012, Loyola University did a study whereby they evaluated 213 schools. And what they have found was that schools with strong social and emotional learning curriculum, on average, outperforms their counterparts by 11 percentage points on their standardized exams. So when you think about my results, I cannot say that this is unique because, like I said earlier, when students' personal lives develop, their academic always follows.
For Ivy Cruz, social and emotional learning starts with just showing up with her whole self, which is often easier said than done.
In my classroom, SEL looks like many things. It's the classroom culture that we create together. It's setting a tone in the beginning of the school year. So we build a shared community together. Some examples are we do community agreements. And so everybody shares what is one thing they need to feel safe in a community or in a classroom. It's allowing a space for all students to feel safe to be their authentic selves. So to show up in the classrooms as their full self. When I was young, being an immigrant, first generation, young woman of color, I don't think I brought all my full self to the classroom. I had to leave parts of myself at the door and kind of showed up as my academic self. And I think that's often what many people do. We show up to the classroom, we focus on our minds, and SEL invites folks to bring their hearts and their whole selves and their culture and their families to the classroom. As teachers, we can often see students as just what they produce in our classrooms, the assignments that they do, the grades, their behavior. But SEL invites us to see them as a whole person. My class is very student-centered, so students lead a lot of the class. So they'll teach these SEL concepts to one another, and then in turn also teach younger students, because I work with high school students. There's a concept in Hawaii called a'o. So we're all teachers and learners. Even myself as an educator, I walk in as a facilitator. I'm not the all-knowing teacher imposing content on students. We learn from each other.
SEL has had a similar impact for educators and students in all corners of our nation, helping teachers like Alhassan Suso recognize the benefits beyond improved academic achievements.
Not only did I now have a relationship with them, but I know what actually motivates them. I'm a big believer that teachers are leaders. To be a leader is to influence. You can only influence somebody once you know what influences that person. So I now have the tools in my hand because I know their stories to now push them in the direction I want them to go into because I know what each and every one of them is motivated by. And that started the journey of asking the question, what do my students need? That's all I focused on. And I started implementing my own strategies into the classroom in terms of what they need. And by the end of the year, we went from a 25% standardized pass rate the previous year to 70% the second year. While those numbers are great, I mean, most important part of for me was the personal transformation I saw in my students. That's when this whole idea of putting the needs of the kids ahead of the curriculum and also focusing on what are their motivations and their desires became the forefront of my teaching.
Danielle Dupuis recognizes that even the most routine interactions teachers have with their students can have a lifelong impact based on her own experience when she was in school.
I often think about what if I had never found that person? What if that person had never appeared in my life? And that to me is what is really impactful about education because you never know the moment that you are going to make a difference. That one symbol of reaching out a hand instead of pointing a finger. That one time that you stood up for somebody. That one time that you had a shared interest and you recognized in a kid like, hey, that was so awesome and I loved what you did and can you tell me more? Making connections with kids. It's just so important and so valuable. And I think for a long time in education, it's been very just show up, deliver, and then you're done. That's not what it is at all. It's about building relationships with kids and making them recognize the potential that they have to do all the good things. It's finding their passions and fueling that passion because we need more educators. We need doctors. We need all of the things. Having that choice to be able to kind of pursue those things is really, really important. And how else are they going to do that if they're not inspired, if they're not making connections? And that's all social emotional. That's not the content.
But for all the positive impact and empowerment SEL helps educators offer their students, there have been instances where social and emotional learning was not used well. And when done poorly, even by well-meaning educators, SEL can do more harm than good. especially when inequity is a factor.
Unfortunately, I have seen where SEL has not been done well. And in Hawaii in particular, I think some people in the beginning, maybe years back, were a little resistant to SEL. Like, what is this new thing that's kind of being brought here? Is it relevant to the host culture, like Hawaiian culture? When I started getting more into SEL and attending different like conferences and workshops, especially on the continental US, I started to notice that SEL, also related to the mindfulness movement, seemed like it was a behavior management strategy. In particular, I would say for Black and Brown youth in like urban settings. So there was something very visceral that I reacted to that didn't sit well with me. It was kind of a tactic to address certain populations. And so what I appreciate about how Ed First approaches it with SEL in action is it's a more of a critical approach to SEL. The SEL approach is one that's inclusive of diverse communities, first generation, immigrant, refugees, multilingual learners. There's an intentionality about it that is equity and inclusion focused, which aligns with what I believe. So I was super grateful to encounter this world of SEL because I don't think it's the same across the broader spectrum. Another place where I saw that it wasn't done well was we were doing a professional development workshop for faculty and staff, and it was the first kind of introduction of SEL for the school. And when SEL is done well, it should be school-wide. However, my approach is you invite folks in and then let folks have the choice and be able to opt in, and then the ripple effects will come versus everyone has to do this. This is, you know, kind of mandating things that happens a lot in public education. And if you just think about children, anytime you force them to do anything, no matter what it is, they're not going to want to do it. Any person, right? So, you know, if you don't give people agency, they feel like they have a loss of control, and people want to, you know, have a sense of agency in their lives and have a sense of voice. So we mandated, you know, this SEL for everybody to learn. And I've had my feelings about it, but I tried to focus on the goal. And what it turned into was then, this is how everybody should behave. This is how we should communicate. And it felt very missionary, colonial, especially with the history in Hawaii. So that was SEL not done well. Even with the best intentions, it can turn poorly, do harm, right? So it turned people off from SEL, which is what we didn't want. So that was an unfortunate situation.
But being mindful of these risks and challenges is a first step in ensuring a healthy learning environment for both students and educators. Miles Williams has worked hard to prioritize his students' well-being, even over academics.
Kids, man, you gotta love them. Like, I can't imagine not working with kids. And I think one of the hardest things about being a principal is that I'm not as proximal to kids as I want to be. You know, I don't get to see them in the hallway. I get to come in classes every once in a while. If I have to cover a class, I get to cover a class. But they are just they're sponges, right? They want to do well. They want to please. They want to grow. They want to learn. I think one of the coolest things is seeing like a kindergartner who screamings every day to get into the classroom, and like you have to help them, support them, get into the building, and they're throwing tantrums, etc. And then the next year they're a first grader and it's a completely different kid. And they're self-regulating and they've done these things, and you're like, whoa, how did that happen? And well, some's just maturity, but then a lot of it is intentional things taking place every single day, and their parents are able to see like, wow, they know how to regulate their emotions. My kid went home and asked to take a break, right? That's the thing that we have in our classroom that I didn't bring up. Each classroom, we have a take a break space. We encourage students, if you are having a rough moment, if whatever, go take a break. Everyone needs to be able to take a break. And that's something that adults need to be able to do too. I wish we had more intentional spaces to be able to kind of take a break at school.
In episode 4 of The Power of SEL, we will address teacher well-being through adult SEL practices, which is not the same as individual-focused notions of self-care. And it all starts with school leaders like Miles Williams.
Adult SEL is arguably the most difficult part of my job as a principal. A lot of us do not have the privilege of formal SEL instruction. And so I'm tasking our teachers with, hey, you need to teach SEL formally. And the same exact things that they're teaching their kids, they don't see how they're not doing those things with one another or with me or with their kid or with families. It's so important that we're creating a space where everyone is a learner in this regard. I think especially when it comes to like self-regulation, how are we communicating our needs? How are we communicating our wants? It can be a very challenging thing for adults to be able to do in community with one another, especially in a very diverse environment. Our school is socioeconomically diverse, racially diverse, and a lot of our adults aren't used to being around people that are different than them. And so what does that look like in a school context? What does that look like when you're supposed to get someone to cover your class and they didn't cover your class and you're upset about that and you need that person to do what they said they were going to do and you don't know how to voice and communicate that? Oh, you only know one way to voice and communicate that to somebody. Or you know not to, right? And you're shutting down and you don't communicate. And what does that mean for the people that you're interacting with? So frequently we have to check ourselves and figure out, like, if we're requiring two kids to have a conversation in conflict before they return to class, how do I as a school leader ensure that you two adults who are working alongside each other are having a difficult conversation and are being courageous in doing that to make sure that we can do the best thing that we can for kids and repair y'all's relationship? And so adult SEO is so important for us to be able to model for kids, but then also for us to be learning it alongside kids for each other.
And just like Miles, Ivy Cruz understands how prioritizing adult SEL helps her better provide what her students and coworkers need from her.
I think one of the keys is that we practice what we preach. You have to go to counseling yourself if you're going to help others, right? Help yourself as you help others. As educators, sometimes we feel so pressured to focus on the content that we almost forget the humanity of being educators. Sometimes, you know, when it's busy, right? We don't eat, we forget to go to the bathroom, you're just going through the days and you have all these different pressures that we face and realities, very much realities. So we have to be gentle and kind with ourselves as we would with students. We have to take those moments to breathe just as we teach our students to breathe. And then just being able to practice SEL then has ripple effects. I come in with a background of social justice and diversity and equity. So I had that foundation before I got into SEL. So I think that we all just need to do the work, just continue to do the work, continue to do the learning, recognizing we all have bias and there's no shame in that. That's a first step, because then we can take the opportunity to learn more about our students, learn more about where they come from, especially if they're different from us and have different backgrounds. I've been fortunate to see through the SEL in Action convenings the wide array of what SEL looks like and the different communities that folks work in, but this shared value of creating a better humanity, for lack of a better way to say it. Like, there's a shared intention of goodness in our world and wanting to foster that.
For me, education is twofold. It's the development of the mind and the development of character. It is Emerson who said that educating the mind without educating the heart is no education at all. So as we are thinking about helping our students or children to become successful in school, we also need to think about how are we helping them to live meaningful lives and to use their life and experiences to serve something greater than themselves.
The Power of SEL is brought to you by Novo Foundation, Education First, and Big Duck. Special thanks to our expert guests, Dr. Bladine Barthelis, Ivy Cruz, Danielle Dupuy, Sissy Goff, Alhassan Suso, David Thomas, and Miles Williams. Our Education First production and writing team is Chad Rubicaba, Brinny Ramsey, Fatima Omar, and Aaron Papelka. From Big Duck, strategic guidance is by Farah Trumpeter, artwork design by Claire Taylor Hansen, project management by Brenda Perez, copywriting by Nicole Tufts, and writing, recording, editing, and sound design by Marcus DePaula. Music is by Cody Martin. This podcast is made possible because of the work of the SEL in Action Fund grantees, who you can learn more about at thepowerofsel.org. If you liked The Power of SEL, please recommend it to a friend or rate and review it on your favorite podcast app. I'm Emily Brookhart. Thank you for joining us on this journey of exploring well-being and academic achievement through social and emotional learning on The Power of SEL. In our next episode, we'll be hearing more educator voices and learning how they are successfully implementing SEL practices in their schools.